Welcome to the Button Mashers of the Empire podcast, your source for all that is Star Wars The Old Republic related.
I'm going to regret this. You watch your language.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Button Mashers the Empire podcast. As always, I'm Ray, and with us, Mike. Mike, how's it going?
Not too bad. A little bit of a cold going on, but hey, life goes on.
Tis the season. And Nikki?
Hello. Why do you always introduce Mike first? Is it because I'm a girl?
Oh. Yes. Yes, it is. this week in the hot seat, we're going to bring in somebody with a fresh new perspective, give us a new perspective on Star Wars from someone who has not been playing it since launch. We're bringing in Ben. Ben, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. What does it say that I'm introduced after Nikki?
You're the special guest, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, the special guest.
It's like you come in at the end of the credit, a show starts. Yeah, and featuring Beth.
Are you wearing a red shirt?
Nope. Should I be? I have one.
All right, so we got a lot of things to go over this this podcast. Let's go ahead and get started. First, we're going to go ahead and go over a few things going on with Star Wars. You know, we just got the new patch. We got 1.2 out, and a lot of things. We've gotten a lot of new things. One of the things I'm going to go over first, though, is BioWare is kind of celebrating the legacy coming out, and they're giving people, their, quote, loyal players 30 days of free time, which is, I think, is fantastic. It really shows kind of a serious appreciation that they really appreciate the people that have been there playing with us. Now, they originally had it to where you needed to have a level 50. Now, this brought up a lot of problems. A lot of people didn't really agree with this because they've been playing since you know, beta and since launch, but they didn't have a level 50 because they bounced from character to character to check stuff out. The internet was ablaze with people kind of complaining about this, rightfully so, and lo and behold, BioWare listened to the people and changed it. And now instead of being a level 50, you need, what is it, 8 or 6 legacy level?
I've heard level 6 for your legacy level.
All right. So as long as you have level 6 for legacy, you get this free 30 days of game time as a thank you. Now, I've been playing, you know, everybody listens knows that, you know, we talk about all the different MMOs we've played, all the different games we've played. I've never heard of any company listening to the people that play their game and reacting so quickly as BioWare did. I mean, they reacted within, what was it, 24 hours?
Less than 24 hours.
Yeah. Which, kudos to them. The people talked, BioWare listened, and that's fantastic. They've also doing the pet, which I believe you also get the pet, but there's also a pet for those who, they're setting up where people who have canceled their account for one reason or another, that you can come back for free to play between this date and that date. I can't remember what the dates were, but and then after that, if you actually reactivate your account and start paying for it again, you get a pet as well, which is cool because they understand that there were a lot of features that were lacking when the game launched, and they understand this. And it's kind of like they're saying, all right, the features that we should have launched with, we have now. Come back and try it again. And kudos to them, because they're acknowledging where the game lacked at launch. They're not trying to hide it. They're not trying to cover it up. They're saying, look, we understand. We fixed everything. We think you'll like it. Come back and take a look at it. And I think that's pretty cool. Some new features for those who may not have read over the patch notes, because I know the patch notes are everywhere, including on the Button Mashers blog. There's new test dummies that you can do. Just like with some of the other games, you can test your rotations and whatnot. Now, to best put those to use, there are combat meters available. However, they're not like your typical game combat meters where it's just an add-on. It's a separate application you have to run on your computer It's easy, very, very easy to set up. It takes only a couple minutes to get everything set up. But you have to run the game in windowed mode. Because the fact that it's in a separate application, if you run it windowed mode, full screen, you can set your meters to show actually on top of the game, to where you can see either damage done, damage received, healing done, or healing received. And you can set it for solo, so if it's just you questing or just a test dummy. They also have it set up for operations, to where one person will set up as the main meter watcher, whatever, and they set up a code, and they pass the code out to everybody to register the code, and that will give everybody's programs interacting with each other, so that you can get an actual good readout on what everybody in the operation is doing.
If you don't have this program, will it register you on it?
No, because you have to set it up to talk to each other by passing out that code or that password to everybody.
So for it to give you accurate information, everybody would have to be using it.
Yes, but since the program is free, and it takes almost no power to run it, I don't see why there's not really any excuse if you have a raid that's like, you know, you guys have to have it. There's not really a reason to not use it, because it like I said, it doesn't take any power at all. It's very easy to set up. If you play Star Wars in windowed mode, full screen, you don't get the lag you do if you, say, play windowed mode normal, where you can shrink the window. That's where, you know, you'll get some lag here or there. You don't really have that. So really, it really runs better than not having one, obviously. I would like to eventually see them actually implement one in the game itself, but I think this is a good holdover until they do something like that.
I think damage meters are a bad idea in general, as a whole. I think you should judge your success by the death of the bosses and leave your elitism at the door.
And I agree. I like to have damage meters just because I'm curious. As long as the boss dies, I don't care. Even if he doesn't die until he's half, a couple seconds or into his enrage timer, as long as he dies, who cares? I just use them because I like to, out of curiosity, I like to see what I'm doing. And I like to kind of compare, be like, you know, well, you run the meters, how much do you run? How much DPS do you usually pull? Or how much, you know, heals per second do you normally do? Just out of simple curiosity, to see if I need to maybe work somewhere. And I know a lot of people run that way as well, but like you're kind of pointing out, you're going to have elitists.
You have to have so much DPS to be able to join this group, or I've dealt with that in other MMOs, and it's awful. You can have a really good player who doesn't do a lot of DPS, but maybe they pay a lot of attention and they spot heal, or you can count on them to grab something if the tank goes down, but their DPS is half of what everybody else does.
Yeah,
DPS doesn't make you a good player.
Exactly. You know, just like, you know, with all those, you know, there's some players that they do have pretty decent DPS, but they're fantastic on interrupts. You know, they're all over the interrupts, you know. And just my biggest suggestion is make sure that you're in a good guild. If you're running with a guild that isn't going to focus solely on damage meters, because again, like we were saying earlier, if the boss dies, that's the whole point of the fight, is downing the boss and getting the loot. It doesn't matter if you killed him 5 seconds faster or not, as long as he dies. Some of the other stuff that are in the patch notes that didn't cover too much from all the notes I've read. Your legacy family tree, which I think is interesting. It's another kind of a role-playing thing, but it also has bonuses, because there is legacy gear that you can buy. A higher level character can buy it with, I know some of them is available through at the fleet through fleet commendations, on Ilum through daily commendations, and you can send this gear to lower level toons that are on the legacy family tree, and they're significantly better items than what you would normally get. Going along with that, the character has to be on the family tree. Now, they don't really explain too much about the family tree and how it really operates. And I found out through trial and error, because I was like, well, I logged onto my main, and on the side, none of my other characters were showing up, and I thought that was really odd. Well, you have to log onto those characters and put them into the tree. They don't just appear. You have to kind of put them into the tree. So you have to log onto every one of your characters, put them into the tree, and then on the main, on whatever character you have that's going to send off that gear, then you'll have ability to send it over. Because if they're not on the tree, you can't send it at all. It's a nice feature, but they really didn't cover how the family tree really worked as far as putting characters into the family tree. Like, they covered, you know, what kind of a connection you can have, and I thought that's kind of the one area they kind of lacked, but with all the things that they've done, you can't really complain. Now, as far as PvP goes, there are some new features of PvP. There is new level 50 beginner PvP gear that's available for credits only. So if you hit level 50 and you really want to get start doing some PvP, start doing some of the more war zones, there's some decent PvP gear, blue quality stuff you can pick up for credits alone, and it's a good starter point. The Battlemaster stuff is now available to any level 50 with the right amount of Warzone commendations. You don't have to have a certain Valor level, you don't have to have anything else extra special, as long as it's just available for, now granted it's a high amount, but you have to just have Warzone commendations. A nice feature, because they did add new gear, there's a new vendor that's the Rated Warzone gear. Now, Rated Warzones aren't yet quite available, but they will be soon. So now's the time to start thinking about what you want to do, because you can either go in by yourself or as a full group. So that's kind of a nice feature, that you can either go in by yourself and just get thrown in with whatever group is your ranking level, or you can take, you know, get like a guild run going, and you have a whole guild group that goes in and does the Rated Warzones. But there's a whole new vendor for that gear. Now, another new feature that I think is a really great feature, even though it's really small on the scale of all the things that they've put out. They've done a major change to the Galactic Trade Network in the fact that you can now search for items by typing in the name or part of the name only. You don't have to choose a category anymore.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. How did that miss launch? I mean...
Well, they kind of wanted to try something different, and, you know, good for them. They wanted to try something different, and you got to give BioWare a lot of credit. They tried something different, it didn't work, they immediately fixed it.
Well,
you got to give them credit on that, at least.
The developers knew how to use it, and it probably seemed really simple to them, but it's like giving a Chinese puzzle box to a four-year-old, you know, and here, I figured it out, now you do it, and you're just like, what the hell am I just hit it with a hammer until it came apart, I don't know what to do, but I'm really glad that they did that. If they could just implement the shift click like Blizzard did, that would be fabulous.
You know, I agree, that would be nice. Well, I mean, because, you know, for everybody who's used the Galactic Trade Network, it used to be you could search for things by name. First you had to choose the main category, then you had to choose a subcategory, then you had to hit search, then the window would open up where you could type something, and then you had to hit that Windows, or that little slots search button, because if you actually hit search, it would take that out of there and do another search for in that random, you know, in that subcategory section. And it was just, it wasn't very good. But I'm glad to see that they actually went through and changed it. Well, it's one of the best changes they have done as far as making things just easier in the game on the simple stuff.
And as I think through kind of how they put it together originally, I feel like it may have been a decision based on like a database query load levels. By separating all of those, you know, you've got to choose the category and then the subcategory. What you're doing is you're really making very small, very tight queries to the database that's holding all the items that are on the. I keep trying to say auction house.
Welcome to the club.
But so it from a back end perspective, looking at the server load, that makes it real nice and easy to manage the query load. Unfortunately, for someone having to use it, it's terrible. So
yeah,
I think they just had to, you know, deal with the fact that queries are going to be bigger and take a little more load, and just to make it usable. I've already noticed since 1.2 hit, there's a ton more stuff available.
Yeah, and I think they were, they may have actually set up that way to limit to kind of make the burden smaller. But I think they may have actually been expecting more of a burst in their first subscription than they did. I mean, granted, they had a lot of subscriptions in the, you know, the first month of launch, but they may have kind of been thinking, we may need to prepare for we're absolute worst case scenario. And since that didn't happen, they're like, okay, well, you know, now we know the actual load that we have, we can go through and adjust it and this will be just fine.
Well, and if you look at the number of servers that went live when the game shipped and are still live with their population levels, it seems like they were expecting a lot more people to be here in the game initially than actually happened.
Yeah. And you know, I'm glad. I mean, granted, some of the servers have a smaller population, and it's obvious, but that gives them plenty of room to grow, because they're going to grow.
When the game first came out, the servers were packed. Sometimes it was a 45-minute wait to log in.
But I think that was just the initial excitement of, oh my god, Star Wars, because not everybody played on the beta, not everybody followed. They were just waiting for the game to launch, and they were like, oh my god, yeah! And then a lot of people came from different MMOs where they're used to a certain way and they know where everything is, they know how everything works, and they get into this new game and suddenly they have to refigure everything out, and you lose a lot of people that way. Because, for lack of a better term, it's the lazy factor. And that's not meant in a derogative way. It's not really derogatory. It's more of a, it's easier to go back to what I'm used to than to try to relearn a totally new game.
Exactly.
Cool. So that's some of the stuff that we have as far as just a brief synopsis of just a few things that were in the patch notes that people may have missed. Mike, we have some more greetings from the future?
We do. Excellent. It's been 1.2 hitting. It's kind of that the future is here a little bit. So, as you mentioned a little earlier, ranked PvP and rated war zones did not make it in for patch 1.2. The gear associated with that did, however, and you can find that at the new PvP vendors. So the initial reports, other than this PvP feature, BioWare seems pretty pleased as to what they got out in 1.2 rather. That they stuck with their release timeline of April of this year. They've already started talking about later patches and features that you're going to see later this year. In particular, they were talking at, BioWare's talking at PAX East, which just happened this past week, and they said that the two most key features that they are going to push forward with in patch 1.3 is a group finder tool, which we've covered in previous podcasts, and also a character transfer option, which you guys were kind of speaking to a little bit on the server populations of, you know, some servers are a little low right now and could benefit from the ability to, you know, transfer a guild or a set of people back and forth to where there might be a little bit higher of a population. One other thing that I ran into in getting ready for the podcast this week that they're talking about in patch 1.3 are passenger mounts.
Nice.
Which should be pretty exciting. BioWare has mentioned that a lot of the existing mounts are going to be modified to include passengers, so that this will not only include you and other players, but will also, as appropriate, include your companions.
Oh, fun.
Nice.
So there are some companions. So in particular, like the trooper has a very large droid companion that you get later on in your storyline, and just is not practical to fit in most mounts. He's not going to show up in there, but if you're running around as a Imperial agent, Cleo Janus can hop on the back of your speeder and go wherever you're going. They've talked about the ability of an entire group to hop on a speeder and head into a heroic area or head to a flashpoint opening as a group, which would be kind of fun.
Sure.
So we also Nikki, have...
Sounds like they're going to pull the stereo out of your speeder.
Damn it!
So
that'll be fun, I think, to me and Mako cruising around. or Blizz, my little Chihuahua.
So that should be a lot of fun. Two things that we've seen a little bit into the far future at PAX East. BioWare was asked a couple of questions relating not only to expanding spaceship battles, but also to guild capital ships, which we've talked a little bit about in prior podcasts. And BioWare, when they were asked these questions, got a little dodgy almost. There's this thing out there that we're working on that we really can't talk about. It sounds like these two could possibly be related, because it was the thing that they were kind of consistently saying, yeah, we can't talk about that. And it'll be exciting to see what they bring to this table. In particular, the gentleman that asked about the guild capital ship was saying that he is in a extremely large guild, and BioWare was kind of alluding to the fact that these guild capital ships are coming maybe the end of this year-ish. You know, they're not locking down to any kind of timeline, but it's not going to be 3 years from now. It's going to be on the horizon sometime soon. They also indicated that the storyline that you've gotten engrossed into as part of your characters should see some new content as early as this year. But it's definitely something that they have a lot of people working on, that I think a lot of people have gotten into their character story and want to see how this arc continues. And it's definitely something that BioWare is working on right now.
Yeah, I know I myself, on the Sith Warrior chain, I would really like to see more of the storyline. I'm not really going to go into it because I know some people just haven't played that storyline. I don't want to give anything away because it's really a good storyline. But I myself would love to see a continuation from where it left off, because it really kind of left off on a really high high. And I would like to see it just keep going to that level.
Sure. You know, I think I've seen probably three or four classes into their story enough to say, oh, this is a great story. I want to see how this ends. And the Sith Warrior isn't even one of them. So I'm glad to hear that that's out there. And I definitely want to see these stories continue.
Agreed.
So I hear we have a new character in the hot seat today.
We do. Ben, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a little background as far as MMOs you've played in the past, to kind of let people understand that, you know, you may be new to the game, but you're not really new to games in general.
He's a Virgo, okay, and enjoys long walks on the beach. I said Virgo.
Does his
Virgo.
Wife know he's a Virgo?
Well, let's see. I could really, really date myself. Talk about some of the first games I played, which were like Civilization 1 and, you know, Star Control 2, way back in the day. As far as MMOs, I played was Star Wars Galaxies. Insert, you know, shudder and took me a long time after that to even get around to even trying another MMO. Jumped into City of Heroes. Actually, me and Sarah both, my wife, were both playing City of Heroes for quite a while. And that was fairly fun. It definitely was a early MMO. It wasn't, it was better thought out and better put together than Star Wars Galaxies. We had a reasonable amount of fun with it. But then WoW rolled along, and that was the end of City of Heroes for us. I think it took all of 2 days of watching me play WoW for Sarah to require another copy for her use.
Yeah, Nick and I the same way.
Then 6-7 years of WoW. I don't even remember. It was a long time. Finally just had the end of it. It wasn't so much that things were bad with Cataclysm, I just kind of stopped caring. And so shut down that account early last year, and then just haven't played any MMOs since then, and then BioWare had this brilliant idea of giving away 7-day trials to Star Wars The Old Republic, and that was the end of my MMO drought. The record still kind of hate you guys a little bit.
I won an R2-D2 beanie hat for inviting you.
Have you actually received it?
I have not received it yet.
So you haven't actually won anything?
No, I actually haven't actually won it yet, but I keep telling everyone I won it because I want to win it.
Power of positive thought.
That's right.
There you go.
I know I'm ahead in the inviting people, so I'm hoping everybody else has less friends than I do. So that I can get the R2-D2 hat.
Well, you are internet famous, so I mean, you've got a larger pool of people to draw from.
This is a true statement.
That is right.
Alright, so as far as Star Wars goes, how do you feel about the overall gameplay itself? You know, the engine they use for the graphics, as far as the movement, the overall UI, both pre and post 1.2, other features. What do you think of the game as a whole so far?
So far, really like it. I guess one of the ways I'd put it is that the game plays really solid. There's no feel of disconnect from, you know, pushing a button and something happening. WoW was one of the first that was really good at it as well. And they've just kind of continued on here doing the same thing. So, I mean, it plays like you're playing a single player game. It just happened to be doing it with hundreds of thousands of people, which is awesome. So, you know, from that perspective, I really like it. The original UI was functional. All the individual components were well thought out. It annoyed me a little bit. I couldn't move things around. It annoyed me a lot that I couldn't scale it. That's one of those features that I kind of have to have, but that's because this monitor is ridiculous. But I mean, it's a concern. There's a reasonable percentage of people that are running these like 2560 by 1600 resolution monitors, and without UI scaling, I was looking at, you know, skill icons that are, you know, about 3/8 of an inch tall, or a centimeter for, you know, our metric friends.
So break out the magnifying glass to put your points in.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. I could use it, but I kind of had to squint a little bit at times. And so with the new changes with 1.2, all of that's solved. You can scale the UI as a whole and then scale individual components separately from that to get even more scaling. I love it. I've got, you know, everything, all the important information I need is huge and easy to look at. And I'm just pleased as punch with the new UI changes. So, I mean, that basically wiped out one of my biggest complaints with the whole game. So, yeah.
Agreed. I thought I was going to need new glasses. I kept going to Ray, can you read this? Is that a 5 or a 6? I can't.
So it was
it's neither. It's Jawa.
Yeah.
Jawa. I guess the only other complaint I have still is that this gets into me being, I'm such a stickler for just the way an application functions. It's probably a side effect of hanging out with way too many software developers the last 10 years or so. It drives me crazy that I open up the loader to start playing the game. It comes up. Everything's great. I go to type my password, and it hasn't taken focus. The cursor's sitting there flashing in the box, and I'm typing in whatever app I was using before I started it. And it's a tiny little thing that frustrates me to death. And they do it in a few places in the game, too. The add friends box is the same thing. It's like, I click add friend. I assume that the next thing I want to do is type the name of the friend I want to add. The game thinks I want to be selling items or shooting dudes.
Yeah, I completely agree. It does bug the heck out of me that, you know, it should be that way. Mm-hmm. And I finally broke myself out of the habit, and I figure, well, now that I finally broke myself out of the habit, they'll bring us in with a mini patch that'll fix it.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised it wasn't in 1.2, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, now as far as finding help for missions or groups for flashpoints, coming into this you know, it's been a while. The game's been out for a while. There's a lot of people out there playing it now. Do you think it's easy, difficult? Do you think they should improve something? What do you think?
Well, I'll just be completely blunt. It's a terrible mess. Yes, I'll admit I'm spoiled by WoW and the Looking for Group. But, I mean, for me, I play MMOs to play a game, have fun playing a game, and do it with a few of my friends. I'm not the kind of person that's, you know, being social with everyone in the entire zone all at the same time. I don't really care that much about the other people around. And so for me, when Blizzard introduced the Looking for Group abilities or, you know, tools, it made the game dramatically better for me. It was just, you know, I don't have to chatter in various chat channels trying to track somebody down. I can just click a button and go about my business while the game puts a group together for me. And, you know, if you get some terrible people, so be it, you deal with that. There's so much content that I feel like I'm missing. I've got, you know, my highest level character is about 35 now. And I feel like I have to skip, you know, a good 25% of all of the content on every planet. And I'm skipping flashpoints just because I'd rather be spending my time questing and leveling and getting gear and having fun playing the game than sitting around waiting for somebody to maybe decide to do a heroic quest with me. So I don't have any good things to say about trying to get into the flashpoints or the heroic missions.
Okay. And, you know, those are, you know, valid points. It is difficult. You know, you kind of have to, when it comes to the quests, the heroic quests, like you said, timing is everything, I guess. You know, if you happen to be there and happen to see somebody in chat going, "Hey, does anybody else need this one?" Then great. But the chances of that happening, not really that good.
Exactly. Like with my bounty hunter, I was talking about. I've been able to do two heroic quests in that way ever. And it's just, man, a lot of it's just my personal preference for how I want to deal with other people in the game. But at the same time, I get these quest descriptions as I'm picking up these heroic quests, because a lot of time you can't tell if it's a regular quest or a heroic quest. So I'm like, that sounds like a lot of fun. I really want to do that. Oh, it's a four-person heroic. And that's, yeah. I think that's the part that bothers me the most about it, is they're really fun-looking quests. They're well-written. I mean, all the quests are well-written, but it's like some of the best writing and some of the coolest ideas are reserved for these heroic quests. And it's like, I really wanted to do that, and now I can't. So I'll go somewhere else.
You hear that, BioWare? We know you listen to this podcast, too. Take that into account.
Server only. If you put in a Looking for Group, server only. Don't open it up to every single person in that plays Star Wars.
Agreed.
All right, yeah, I mean, at least you can, you know, if you find people that are good, you can make friend groups, etc.
Yeah. Now, I know to me, playing it, it's a big part of it. Your feelings on the environmental details, the graphics, and from what I can tell, the lack of terrible repeating maps. what do you think?
They nailed it. I mean, you know, from the very first minute, it feels like Star Wars. I don't even know how to try and describe that, but it's all of the little detailed points about how they've constructed all of these areas, just, you know, what things look like. You know, you come into this and it's immediately familiar. It's, you know, I'm playing Star Wars. Yeah. You know, lots of little touches. You can tell the people that are putting the game together are massive Star Wars nerds. There's, you know, tiny little nods to things all over the place. And it's brilliant.
I completely agree. I think they did fantastic, and I love the fact that you walk up toward, you know, up to a cliff or up to a mountain, and, you know, we've all played those games where if you are not right on top, if you look, if you're, say, your camera's back a little bit, and you're looking at the mountain, you can actually pick out the pattern very easily as far as the map they used, and I have yet to really see anything like that in Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't know what they've done exactly with their texture randomization, but it works really well. You don't see any of that texture repeating.
Right, now as far as another little I know you said you haven't really had much of an opportunity, but the opportunities you have had, how did you feel as far as flashpoints in the game?
Really, really liked them, actually. Ran through, like, even during, ran through the, what is it, Black Talon, you know, the very early flashpoint, when I was still on my the 7-day trial, and ran through it with a buddy who was also on a trial, and we were on Skype. Just, we spent more time talking about how much fun we were having with it than we did talking about what we were actually doing in the flashpoint. It's they're really well written, well thought out. I mean, it draws you into, you know, hey, we're actually doing something instead of just trudging through a cave, smacking everything that moves to get crazy loot. They're fun. That's great.
I agree.
Yeah, it feels like you're in like a little episode of something. You know, you're in a half hour, 45-minute, almost like a Clone War episode, if you will.
Yeah, and the flashpoints can change depending on how you answer things too. So it makes the doing it over and over and over again really not so bad.
Yeah, you can get some changes depending on how you go about it. And and then on top of it, we were able to have that conversation about how much we were having fun with it because they're so well balanced and tuned, I guess is the word we pull in from the WoW dialogue. The difficulty level for the flashpoints is just right. It's enough that it's challenging. You're not just kind of sitting there, you know, mashing keys, going whatever. You have to actually be involved and paying attention to what's going on. But it's not so hard that you're really getting creamed at any point.
Cool. Now, as far as missions go, do you think that you start off at the spaceport, and then by the time you're done, you're clear across the planet and working your way back to leave the planet. Do you think they move you well across the planet? I mean, how do you think they've done on laying out missions and where they kind of are?
I mean, one of my comments early on is how well the mission progression is. It's laid out in such a way that if you're doing all the missions that are available, they tend to be in the same general area. You're not getting stuck with this quest that pops up way off in the middle of Timbuktu that you got to trudge all the way across the planet to go do that one quest. They're nicely grouped. It makes the progression work really well. It's smooth. You've always got something to do. They're spaced well enough that you're not picking up stuff that's suddenly a couple levels above your level. You get there and go, oh, well, I can't do this yet, except for the heroics, but at least they're actually labeled as such. It seems to work really well. My only possible complaint is it feels like it drags a little bit in the middle on planets. I'm really excited when I get to a new planet. I'm having fun getting to know the area, getting to know what's going on, doing missions. You get towards the end of the planet and things really start ramping up. There's all kinds of awesome stuff going on. You're being a badass and blowing stuff up all over the place. It's just in the middle, you get through the kind of the initial setup, and then it almost feels like they just kind of stretched it a little bit further to, kind of increase the level range of the planet. I think if all the planets were like even one level less of a range, you'd go through them faster, which means they'd have to have more planets and all that, but it would probably get rid of that little bit of drag. But honestly, it's a really minor concern. The missions in the middle are still really fun.
And what do you think as far as the rewards you get from the missions? Do you think they're good enough? Do you think that maybe they're kind of going, well, here's the minimum you can use or that you have to get through those, or do you think they're adequate enough?
They seem to have it kind of right on the nose. I mean, the bigger, more important quests tend to give better gear or better rewards. I love that you get some choices. You can pick some gear for your companion, or you can pick just a random gear box or some commendations, or maybe an upgrade for yourself. I've never really gotten into a place, I've got a couple characters around level 20, so I've spent probably a lot more time on the game so far than I should have, but never really got to a point where I felt like I was hurting for stats, if you know what I mean, where yeah. feel like I've got to go back to the Imperial fleet or something and buy some new gear so that I can keep up with the mobs that I'm dealing with in a particular quest. They're giving you enough. I mean, there's so many missions. They're fairly short. They're quick. You go and do them. You get another chance at some more gear. I don't ever feel like I'm hurting for equipment. It's kind of fun to be able to use through skills to get something that's a pretty good upgrade over the stuff you're getting from the missions. But I feel like even if you were just doing the missions, you'd have no trouble keeping your gear intact.
Well, that's cool. It's really nice to get that perspective, because I know a lot of us have been playing since launch or since the beta, and you know, we've gone through and we've seen a bunch of stuff that's gone through, and we've kind of gotten used to a lot of stuff. It's kind of nice to see that perspective of someone who's just coming into it after it's been out for a little while, and they've made some tweaking, and they've done, you know, they've done a little tweaking, they've done little changes here and there aside from the big stuff in 1.2. So it's, you know, it's really good to hear a lot of the different perspectives you've got on the game.
And I'm having fun. I mean, overall, I find myself really liking the game. It's got, you know, I mean, considering how new the game is, it's got some really minor little issues. Trying to think back to, say, even WoW when in its first year, this one is so much further along. Really looking forward to seeing how it goes going into the future.
Agreed. I think it's got a good future. I'm definitely going to be in it for the long run. All right, so Nikki, what are you going to be covering today?
Well, I got the what is it, an Orokeet pet today, and I wanted to talk about explaining how to get that pet.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, I'll post I have pictures and coordinates and whatnot, and I'll post those on buttonmastersoftheempire.blogspot.com. But once there's two nests on Alderaan, and I'll post the coordinates. And from what I hear, the egg has an 8-hour spawn time. Now, I've only found it once, so I don't know really when that 8-hour, if that's true or what. But that's what I've heard on the forums and whatnot. When I got the egg, I found a blog that talks about all the Star Wars pets, and I'll post a link to that as well. But once you find the egg, and you're like, okay, now what? Because it just says something about, like, it needs a heat source and needs to be nurtured. So you take the egg, and you find it on Alderaan, and then you take it to Tatooine, and you want to fly out to as close to the Dune Sea as you can get, or whatever flight pass you have. And there's these big metal towers around that are that harvest water from underground and in the atmosphere. And you can click on them, and it shows a channeling bar that says harvesting water. And you'll get a buff that says that you're like refreshed and hydrated. And that'll last until you die or until you get hit, I think. You have to get that debuff because you have to take the egg and your buff all the way to the other side of the Dune Sea. Again, I'll post coordinates to, there's these, like a little building with solar panels all around it. And you have to walk underneath the solar panels that are facing inward. And I'll show pictures. And once you walk into it, you get a debuff that says you're suffering from heat exhaustion because you're standing underneath all these solar panels that are just beaming heat down on you. But you'll get this message across the screen that says the egg is, you can see life moving inside the egg. And you just have to stand underneath there for about a minute. Now you keep getting this stacking debuff from heat exhaustion, but the water buff that you've picked up from one of them reservoirs is blocking it. And once the egg hatches, you'll lose your the water buff, and the heat buff will start ticking away your life, so you have to run out from underneath there. And congratulations, your egg hatched, and you have your Orokeet bird. You just have to learn it and summon it, and you're done.
You know, I think that stuff is kind of cool. Where, you know, it's a chain of events you have to do in order to get something. Like, back in Classic Warcraft with, to get through into Onyxia's lair, you know, you had to go through a series of things in order to make that amulet to even get them to the door. I'm glad to see that they've implemented a lot of that kind of stuff in Star Wars. It's not just a walk up to the vendor, buy it, now you have it. You have to put forth some effort, and you have to explore, especially now that the game is so new, there you can't go out and find it on 14 different blogs telling the exact same thing. You kind of have to pick some pieces of information where you can find it and then put it together and then still search for it.
Yeah, these Alderaan nests are brand new. They were just put in with 1.2. So it's only been, what, 2 days? It was really hard to find information on what to do, because some people had some of the information and other sites were speculating on what to do, and I was running all around trying to figure out what was real and what wasn't. I'm working on right now, there's supposed to be a Tauntaun pet on Hoth that you have to use one of the, you can buy this gun from a vendor tucked away in the mountains on Alderaan called a non-violent critter catcher of some kind. And you're supposed to be able to lure out a tiny Tauntaun and hit it with this, like a gun to trap it, and then tame it and keep it as a vanity pet. But again, it just came out in 1.2, and I'm all over forums and blog posts trying to figure out if anybody's done it, and what do I need to do to lure this pet and then trap it, and where do I trap it? I'll get back to you. Hopefully I'll have it done by the next podcast, but there's 40 forum posts about it, and still nobody knows what to do with this Tauntaun. People are like, well, if you have the gun, and the gun says to use it in a spaceport, or people are like, no, you have to lure it with this liver jerky, and oh, it's very confusing.
So once you get it figured out, can our followers expect to see it on the Button Mashers blog?
Absolutely, as soon as I figure it out.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go ahead and go into another installment of the MMO Water Cooler, where we'll cover some things that are going on in the world of MMOs and other locations. Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting is at PAX East, there were some new indie games. They were basically phone app games. And there were a couple I thought were interesting out of the ones that were there. One was Spell Tower. Now, it's kind of like Tetris meets Scrabble, I guess, where you have a bunch of these letters in this little grid, and you click on them to spell a word. And then when you spell them, you know, the blocks disappear. But the longer you take, more blocks come up from the bottom, making it, you know, the blocks rise up higher and higher and higher until eventually if they hit the top, you lose. So you really have to kind of plan your words and try to keep, you know, like, you can't really have one edge where, you know, you haven't used any of the letters, and pretty soon you're 2 blocks high and everywhere else, but you're 12 blocks high on the side.
Use your words.
It's,
like, for me, how many times can you spell the word and?
Now, the other one I thought was interesting was Lawnmower Challenge. Yes, it is exactly what it sounds like. It's a puzzle game that makes mowing the lawn fun. And now, I haven't had a chance to play this because, again, they're phone app games. And unfortunately, my phone, I can't get them on it. Boo. But so be it. But I did check it out, the game. I did go to their site, which you can get to if you go to the PAX website. There are links to these games. You can go check out their sites. They say it takes the boring job of mowing the lawn and makes it into a fun puzzle game, which it does look like it does. And as you go through the different levels, now you have things like, you know, mud that slows you down, or gates you have to go around that are blocking your way, or, you know, things of that nature. Well, as you play, you get to unlock things like seeds. Well, you can plant the seeds in the mud, turn it into grass. Well, now you don't get slowed down by it. Keys to unlock the gates so you can go through the gate instead of around it to get the puzzle done. Just little things here or there that, you know, kudos for them for thinking outside the box on this. You know, I would love to have been there when somebody was like, all right, we got to think of a game. What kind of game should we make? I know. Let's make a game about mowing a lawn. I would love to be a fly on the wall during that.
So I had to mow the lawn today, and it was really boring. You know what I want to do today? Mow the lawn on the computer.
Now, there are... Okay, other things that are coming out. Now, Guild Wars 2, they're still doing their beta, and still doing the invites. Now, there are some things that they're throwing out here. If you go to the Penny Arcade store for those in North America, or the NC Soft merchandise store for anyone in Europe, you can actually buy a plush version of the Guild Wars 2 feline char, which is like looks like an armored lion with fiery mane, basically. It looks cool, but they've got a stuffed version that looks kind of cute. Now, if you go take a look at it, it says right there, it is not a toy, and it is not meant for children. So it really is a plush toy designed for adults to sit on display, which I thought was pretty funny, because you don't normally see that kind of fine print saying, this is a plushie, but you can't let your kids play with it. Now, you can go ahead and pre-order Guild Wars 2. Pre-orders have been out for a little while now. There's three different versions. There's the digital download. It's $59.99. It's just the game. There's the digital deluxe for $79.99. You get a multiple use, temporary use. It's like you can keep using it, but when you summon it, it's only out for a certain amount of time. It's a combat pet that you can help you through different circumstances to help you fight and whatnot. You get a mini figurine, as well as a... Now, I thought this was interesting. You get a 5-day use golem banker that will let you use banks and auction houses type stuff, but you only get to use it for 5 days, and then poof, it's gone. And I thought that was a little... I think that's a little weird. They're like, this is a really cool thing, but you only get it for use for 5 days, so really you might want to wait and not use it right away. Then two other things you get is a one-time use item that will unlock some features in PvP, such as gear and whatnot. And then there's a one-time use item that will help your guild influence level, which is, I guess, as you level up your influence level, you get to unlock stuff like guild banks and stuff. Now, there's the Collector's Edition, which is $149.99. Now, notice all these things seem very familiar. The digital download, the deluxe download, this Collector's Edition. Star Wars theme, anyone? Now, with the Collector's Edition, you get an art book that's got some other art and some other things in it. You get a larger figurine. You get a music CD, as well as a book, kind of the making of Guild Wars 2, as well as a custom art frame. I've seen some of the stuff. Some of it looks kind of neat, but the custom art frame, I haven't actually seen a picture of it, and that just seems a little weird.
It seems like not very much stuff for a lot of cash.
Agreed.
I'll admit to having pre-ordered the Diablo 3 Collector's Edition. But that's $50 less, and it comes with a considerable amount more. I mean, it's got the same basics. You know, you get kind of a figurine, which is that, you know, thumb drive that sticks in Diablo's head, which comes preloaded with Diablo 2, which is not something I need. That brings me up to like 5 copies of it now. But I have a hard time with these $150 collector editions. Unless they're putting in something really impressive, and I haven't seen what it does yet.
I agree.
So the figurine that comes with the collector's edition, I think it's a pretty sizable figurine from what I've seen of it.
It is.
It's more like almost like a little mini statue, not like a 2-inch, 3-inch figure. It's like a 10-inch.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, exactly. It's I think it was about 8 inches. I mean, it's definitely a definitely display statue. But again, getting the book, the figurine, music CD, making of frame, plus all the stuff you get with the deluxe, digital deluxe, really, from my perspective, as far as someone who plays these games, I don't really see myself using any of these other things, like the art book. I have got a collection of the WoW atlases, and they were cool to have, and I used the classic one a lot, but didn't really use the other ones that much. They were more or less cool to have, and in case I needed them, you know, Nikki and I bought them. But
now they're obsolete, stupid Deathwing.
But as far as like the music CD or the making of book or the art frame, I just don't see. I mean, it sounds great, and you're like, you're hyped up because you're gonna get all this stuff. But then if you think about it, are you really gonna use it? Is it worth spending that extra?
Yeah.
You know, that extra, you know, $100.
That stuff's great, but I really just want to play the game.
Yeah.
I think as collector's editions have become more popular, they've realized they can jack the price up and people will still buy them. I'm reminded of BioShock for the Xbox. I bought the collector's edition for that. It came with like this 10-inch tall Big Daddy figurine. Really cool, really detailed. It was $10 more than the regular version.
Yeah. But now
not three times.
Yeah, and now because you're buying the collector's edition, you're getting a few extra things that essentially fit in the box.
Right.
Yeah.
And in 6 months, you'll be able to buy that stuff off of Amazon or eBay for half the price because they don't want it anymore.
Yep. True.
And you'll be able to download the music for free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, I have a pre-order. Like I said, I have a pre-order for the Diablo 3 Collector's Edition. I'm not going to cancel it, but at the same time, you go onto Amazon and you look at the prices for people that are offering to resell them right away without opening them. I can turn around and sell it for $250 right now.
Thanks.
I don't understand why.
That's tempting.
I don't understand why you would do that. I could pre-order it, or I could pay twice as much as on Amazon.
Well,
what's
the
difference?
With Diablo 3, Collector's Edition, you can't. They're gone. It's actually a limited number. The boxes will be numbered, a lot like the Diablo 2 Collector's Edition ones. So there's a very small number of them that were ever available to begin with.
Well, and that kind of makes more sense because it literally makes it more collectible because it's a limited number that are numbered. It gives you an actual collectability to it.
Well, Star Wars said that too, and they're like, a small amount will be able to pre-order, and they pre-ordered like a million. What's a small number?
Well, they were expecting 40 million people to play the game initially, right? So,
and there are how many people around the entire world? I guess a million's a limited number.
Yeah, it's peanuts compared to 7 billion people.
Well, now another thing with Guild Wars, now this is the original Guild Wars, a big change, I believe it's June 14th or 15th, I think, they're no longer going to support anything before Windows XP. So if you're running 95, 98, 2000, Millennium Edition, you need to upgrade. First off, you should have upgraded a long time ago. But if you run those, you're not going to be able to play Guild Wars anymore.
Yeah,
they're no longer going to support it.
That's kind of the whole of that story. You need to upgrade.
Yeah, you should have upgraded a while ago, at least to XP. I know I still use XP just because I don't really have a copy of Windows 7. It's on Nikki's computer because it came with it. If I had a copy, I would have upgraded to Windows 7, but I have a copy of XP, so that's why my system has XP.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it terrifying that XP came out in 2001? It's 11 years old.
It is, and yet you still couldn't pay me to try use Vista.
Well,
Nikki's laptop had Vista, and shortly after we bought her laptop, we downgraded it to XP.
It wouldn't let me load anything onto it. It kept saying, you do not have the authority to load that. And I was like, I think
like
I do.
Nothing like not having an administrator account.
Well, and I went through and, you know, took off the administrator so that there was no administrator, and it kept telling me, you cannot load that.
Yeah, we had a setup where it should have run anything, and it still fought us, and I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
It will take me less time to hunt down drivers that people have made for XP to replace the Vista stuff than it would to get Vista working right. But so if you're running Guild Wars and you don't have XP or newer, it's time to upgrade. You can get a copy of XP off Amazon pretty cheap. Just buy the full version. Don't even buy the upgrade version. Just buy the full version of XP. Call it a day.
Pro tip from 10 plus years of experience working in the IT industry, never buy a Windows upgrade, ever.
Agreed. Now, one of the other games out there, you guys may have seen the ads, Wizard 101. It's started off as simply a kid's MMO. And my godson Alex, he's 8, he plays it. He loves it. Well, they're starting to focus their aim at adults as well as parents. I've been watching some commercials here or there, and they're starting to focus on people other than the Nickelodeon generation, essentially. They're focusing on, they're kind of drawing focus to, it's nice and smooth, it's easy to use, the graphics are fun. And I think, you know what, kudos to them. You know, they're trying to pull other people in, other age groups into this game that essentially is a cartoon MMO from the looks of it.
It's not that bad of a game.
It's not.
It's basically like playing Magic the Gathering with a Dungeons & Dragons feel to it.
I really didn't need to hear that.
It is very, very simple to understand, and it is geared towards children. It's kind of like that stepping stone into MMOs. He said, Alex loves it. And you don't have very many choices in the game, which is good for a child. You know, there's not a lot of character selections, and you can't really change the way they look or the way they dress. But it's fun. I've played it. Me and him will sometimes get on there and play together. And it's fun to throw down the card and go, oh, you know, I missed, or, you know, roll the dice. And I could see where some, like, our generation would be like, oh, you know, Magic the Gathering with Dungeons and Dragons? Yes, please.
Yeah. And it's also a free-to-play game, which brings in another appeal of the fact that it's something you can play. Not only can you play it, but your kids can play it. You can play it together, and it doesn't cost you a thing. So there's a lot of pros, and you know what? Like I said, kudos to them for aiming in a direction other than kids to kind of say, you know, it is simplistic, you know, it is basic, it's not over the top. We are not even close to trying to compete with some of the big MMOs, but we're fun. Come try it.
Yes, if you have children that are like in the 6 to 10 range, this would be the perfect online to give them the feel that they can talk to other people, but the talking is very limited. It's a very good stepping stone if you want to introduce your children into the gaming and MMO world.
Yeah. Now, another thing that's come up that, there's not much to this, unfortunately. We all want there to be more to this. We all want more information on it. We're all dying for more information, but we just can't get it. For those of you who did not hear, the infamous Ghost Crawler has played Project Titan. However, that is all he can say, is that he's played Titan. He can't talk about it. He can only brag about it. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm still a big Blizzard fan. I think Blizzard makes great games. I personally think that they've kind of run the end of their term with Warcraft. I'm excited to see what Titan is. And now that Ghostcrawler has said it, and then also felt the need to go, guess what? I played Titan. I think there's something to it. So now my interest is a little more piqued than it was before.
He couldn't even say he liked it, or that it was fun, or that it was awesome. All he can say is, I played it.
Well, I'm really interested just from the perspective of Blizzard introducing a new IP, new intellectual property. I want to see where Blizzard goes with a totally new game. I mean, they do a great job with Diablo and StarCraft and Warcraft, but I want to see them doing something new.
I agree. I think they need to do something new, because I really think that as far as Warcraft goes, not necessarily, you know, like, everybody knows my opinion, I loved the game, I played it for a long time, but I think it's kind of run its course. Ultimately, when it comes to a game like that's been out for so long, you have so many expansions, you can only go so many different places to the point where you're kind of out of a new storyline for the most part, as far as any kind of a large content patch or expansion. So I think they're kind of, I personally think that Titan is kind of their next phase. Like, they'll keep Warcraft because, well, it's got a huge following and they'd be stupid not to. But because they know that they've run it for so long, it's time to bring in some new blood for something that's for the future. And, you know, when we eventually we shut down the Warcraft service, which everybody knows it will eventually happen, all game servers eventually get shut down, they have something that will have already picked up the steam and the momentum and continue bringing on their client base.
It has to be scary for them, because they've gone 20 plus years and they developed 3 games. To introduce a fourth that has supposedly, like, Titan is supposedly has nothing to do with Warcraft.
Yeah.
It's its own entity. So that's got to be pretty scary for them, going out on the limb when they haven't really gone out on a limb for 20 years. When they introduced Diablo was, I think, because I believe Warcraft was out and then StarCraft and then Diablo.
It was Warcraft, Diablo, then StarCraft.
But okay, well then, the last new game they introduced was StarCraft, and when was that?
98.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
18 years ago.
Yeah. Well,
I hope it works out, but I'm sure that they're like, oh god.
Honestly,
we should have put more games
Blizzard.
Out.
It's Blizzard. It's going to work out, or they're not going to publish it. They've killed several games over the years because they weren't good enough, and they'll do it to Titan if it needs it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, because again, I still like Blizzard's work. I'm still a big fan of Blizzard's games. I still play Blizzard games. But I look at it this way. If Ghostcrawler played Titan and it wasn't very good, I don't think he would even say he played it. I think if it was good or he was very impressed, he would come out and he comes out and says, "Hey, guess what? I played Titan." Now, because Ghostcrawler's got a reputation, a very good reputation, but for him to come out and say, "Hey, guess what? I played Titan," I think that in itself says something big.
And the maker of Minecraft, Notch is his nickname. His real name is Marcus Patterson, I think.
Like
he is coming out.
Some sort of funny pronunciation, but
yeah, he is coming out with a new game. It's supposed to be 16-bit, just like Minecraft is. It's you can go to the introductory website that talks about it. It's called 0x10c. It's like 0 × 10. To the power of C. I don't know. How do you say that? Any math people out there? No? Okay, anyway. It's the game basis is it's based on in the future in space. And they kind of like what it sounds like is they cryogenically freeze people that they're supposed to sleep for a year. But there's a computer glitch and they sleep for 1 trillion years. So they wake up, and it's year 4279658897. It's on and on and on for 1 trillion. And now you're in space, and it's 16-bit. And he says that there's going to be mining, and you have to build a spaceship, and you know there's a few screenshots. So there's not a lot of information out yet, and no release date. But that's the basis for it, is that you wake up 1 trillion years in the future.
So Minecraft in space. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I'm already sold. Yeah. I will be having a copy of this.
Well, he said it's going to be similar to Minecraft, but different. I mean, it's Minecraft, he doesn't say anything about it being a sandbox game, which Minecraft is. But he does say it's going to be similar, but there's going to be, like, you can fly in your spaceship and explore planets and...
I'm so sold.
Yeah, I'll get it because Minecraft is amazing. But I can't wait to see what it's all about.
Agreed. I think Anything that guy turns out, I think, is going to be good. Because, I mean, as simplistic as Minecraft is, it you just once you start playing it, you just can't stop playing it.
And we have to talk about the new MMO Prime World that's coming out, that is offering special discounts to females. It's like ladies' night at MMO.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
If you can prove you're a real girl via Facebook, you will get a discount and special buffs that will make people want to have you in their group. Now, they're not going to want you in the group based on your own merits, but you may have to flash them and offer these buffs.
It's like Mardi Gras New Orleans, but just like
yes. I am not only a girl, but I play one in MMOs.
What?
I'm not only a girl, and I play one in MMOs.
I thought only guys played girls in MMOs.
Welcome to the internet, where the men are men, the women are men, and the children are FBI agents.
You'll wake up in the morning, you've downed 5 bosses, you're wearing beads. I don't know what happened. But they wanted me.
I'm going to make a prediction that almost none of this is ever going to make it to launch with this game.
I think you're probably right. So really, this game just sounds... I don't have the words.
You know, and
do we know anything about the game other than the fact that they're doing this craziness with women?
No.
Okay.
No. It sounds just like a normal MMO. It's fantasy based.
It'll go free to play within the first 6 weeks.
You give it 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
I give it 6 days.
Well, it's going to take them a certain amount of time to actually recode it for free to play.
No, I think they've already got the coding ready.
They know it's going to happen.
They know it's going to happen. They're just not sure when.
Being a woman in MMOs, I don't feel that I should preach feminism, because whatever, it's an MMO. It shouldn't matter if you're a girl or a guy. You know, Warcraft does really well. It doesn't matter if you play a girl or you play a male character. Your abilities are all the same. Everything's the same. I don't understand why this Prime World is what they said in their press release is that they want hardcore gamers to play their game. So I guess it's geared towards more hardcore gamers. But they want people to socialize more. So they want the hardcore players to bring their wives and girlfriends. And I just want to go, screw you. Because I'm a hardcore gamer, and I brought my husband to games. So am I the exception to the rule? Does that not really happen?
They're restricting themselves to a very small percentage of the population.
Yeah.
Which is known as the, you know, loudest, complainiest group of gamers out there. So they have to do everything perfectly, which they don't have the budget to do because they don't have enough people playing the game. So they're all going to leave. And then they're making 50% of the population of the world angry.
And then putting your girlfriend in the mix who's never played an MMO before.
Right. This is a recipe for one of the most impressive disasters I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I agree. I think this is going to be one of those massive crash and burns that you have to watch.
Yeah. I don't know who's funding this, but if you're listening, stop.
I would say that's the most intelligent thing you could hear from anybody right now. Just stop.
I think a lot of women's groups are just going to go up in arms about this and say, you know, why can't you
why
does it have to be a female who gets a better rate? Why can't you just say bring a friend and get a better rate if you want people to socialize? And why do you have to, it's like seating at a wedding where you have to go girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. It doesn't make any sense. It's not accurate to your audience because not all hardcore gamers are male and not all hardcore gamers play alone. a lot of hardcore gamers make time for their family so they don't have to bring them to MMOs to socialize with them.
We do.
That's why she said a lot of, not all.
Oh, I only talk to my husband via headset.
Well, you know, it's easier that way. You can just mute him when you don't want to listen.
Right.
To him.
Oh, I generally have her muted.
We've been married long enough. I have auto mute. I tell him, I love you, but I have not heard a single word you said since I do. Not a word.
Hey, no, there's an advantage to be taken of that. All right, so I guess we're all in the same boat where we're just going to sit back and watch the fiery crash when it happens in this game. Anything
they
else?
Start
anybody
doing the pat downs to see if you're really a girl to play this game. They're thorough. They're thorough little buggers.
An MMO?
They are. They're partly involved in this.
Amazing.
How do you think they're going to figure out if you're male or female or not to give you the right buffs?
So that basically you have to go to the local airport, get your TSA pat down, and then they'll give you a code that allows you to confirm that you are.
Exactly. This is exactly it. So when this game launches, expect your flight to take a little longer because it's not going to just be passengers in the line. It's going to be gamers too.
Yeah, all 12 of them.
They're in a little Piper cup somewhere.
All right. Anybody else got anything else they want to cover as far as Star Wars or other MMOs? You know, new stuff going on with some other MMOs in the world.
I got nothing.
I think I'm all set.
All right. Well, this wraps up another episode of the Button Masters of the Empire podcast. Thank you again for coming and listening. As usual, you can find our blog at buttonmashersoftheempire.blogspot.com. You can follow us on Twitter at blog BMOTE. You can also contact us through email at buttonmashersoftheempire@yahoo.com. Nikki, where can they find you?
You can contact me at thegamersfridge.com for all your gaming food needs. My email address is gamersfridge@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at gamersfridge.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for Ben. Thank you for joining us. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we'll
Can we contact Ben anywhere, or is he afraid of Twitter?
I'm afraid of humanity. So if you need to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me through Ray and Nikki. It's safest that way.
It's probably better that way, too.
You can find your own rock to hide under from social media. I've already got this one.
If you need to contact Ben or Mike for any further questions or ideas or comments, you can email gamersfridge@gmail.com.
Yep, and you can also go ahead and contact me through the email link on the Button Masters blog site. All right, well, I will catch you guys next week.
Have a good one.
See you later.
Bye-bye now.